Hey, it's Josh. I talked to Damian about the Kentucky Derby, about the foul, about how they justify having jockeys call those fouls, what we could do with transparency to maybe fix some of those issues, what would have made that foul a little bit more palatable, I think, to the public. And then we talked a little bit more about horse racing in general and how it relates to some of our other human sports. And that's all. Enjoy the show. Yeah, okay. I can hear you fine. That was a brutal first couple of minutes that I ended up saying a whole bunch of stuff that I don't think you heard any
of.
Well,
I heard you you thought you were on your phone and you forgot to turn on your microphone, and I heard it all.
Oh, well, I don't think anyone else is going to hear it. Oh. I think I'm going to cut all that
out. Okay, well.
It's on a different file. That's how this Anchor thing works. I'm still getting used to it. But since we disconnected now, it's a different file. So I don't have to use it. It's kind of just cut out on its own.
But you could re-upload it or whatever into this one if you want to edit it in, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I could splice it in. Maybe I'll do like a blooper reel at the end, depending on how much time I have. Who knows?
All right. What's on the agenda today?
Well, Derby Day. How was your Derby Day? There was all sorts of drama and everything, but we've got to start with what's important since I didn't do anything for the Derby because I have two young kids and I'm totally washed. Did you do anything fun?
So, as you know, and as I'm sure, you know, many of our listeners know, I am a big Indy 500 guy. So, for me, the Kentucky Derby is, you know, sort of like the practice laps of for the Indy 500. So, I was out with some friends. I started about 2 o'clock and bar hopped. I do not go to casinos because I do not gamble for a number of reasons. But I was drinking mint juleps and sort of doing Derby Day and Cinco de Mayo at the same time. So juleps and margaritas all day for me.
So I assume when you say you do not go to casinos, that means you didn't head over to like Thistledown or Northfield to watch?
Because
those are both casinos technically. Did you used to go before they were casinos?
I've never seen a horse race live in my life, so no.
Wow. Well, look, I when someone makes a conscious decision to not do something like you have made to not gamble, I would never, ever try to talk you into going to any one of them. I will say, from my own personal experience and for the benefit of anyone else listening who might be okay with developing a gambling problem sometime in the future, going to Northfield or going to Thistledown and like watching that stuff live, man, I'm sure that at some point I'm going to talk about my disdain for what the horse racing game kind of has become. But when you go live and you're just there at the track and you're on the rail, you really can feel why it got to be such a revered sport in the first place. It is a lot
of
fun.
So it's sort of like motorsports. Everybody says it's better in person than it is on television.
Yeah, I would say yes. I think the a huge difference for me in my limited motorsport live viewing experience is that I think motorsports are probably, for me anyway, it seems like they'd only be a lot of fun if you have like pit passes, if you can get in the garages maybe, if you can check out some of the extra behind the scenes stuff. Like that's the thing that kind of tickles my fancy. I don't necessarily like watch NASCAR or racing at home a whole lot, but if anybody said, hey, I have hot passes and we can go down to the speedway and hang out in the pits, I am there 10 times out of 10. Assuming I can get, you know, somebody to watch the kids and all that extra garbage. But like that stuff is so fun and interesting to me. I think it's great. I think for me, like I could go to a horse race and not have any fancy or special access or reservations or anything at all. Like I could legit just go sit at the rail at a track and hang out with the bet book and, you know, maybe, you know, lose 50 or 100 bucks or something like that and just have a grand old time.
Okay. Well, I will say that the Kentucky Derby has been on my bucket list for the past 5 years. For me, it's just, you know, trying to find the time because of my schedule at the early part of May, and it's not cheap and, you know, all that other stuff. So, but it is on my list of places to go. I will say that.
Well, I would love to do it too. Let's, we'll figure something out anyway. So
yes.
Your Derby Day. So you went and you drank mint juleps. And what did you wear? Like pink and powder blue? Did you? I don't know what else.
Shorts and a polo, Josh. The normal Damien attire. Oh. Nothing exciting.
Right. No, that's, I understand. That's like that's Northeast Ohio business casual. Yeah,
exactly. But but I did go. I mean, I am not a horse racing guy. But I tell people I get into it for, you know, an hour every year, you know, this weekend or that weekend or whatever. And I go out and have a good time with my friends who are into it. And, you know, I will do like the bar, you know, whatever that, you know, where you pick a horse and, you know, you win the pool or whatever it's called. Like, I'll do that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. It's like buying Super Bowl squares. Like, that's not, it's not really the same
right,
as gambling.
Right. So I will do that unless you're an NCAA athlete, then it is gambling, but that's a different conversation. So I did that, and then I watched, I'm trying to remember which horse I had. You're going to have to tell me the name. Vicious?
He's not a horse. I think that was a man.
There was a horse whose name began with a V, I thought. That was in blue, probably blue and black, I think. That's the horse I had.
I believe you. Maybe his name is Veranda. Yeah. That's a very Kentucky thing. Everyone has Verandas. Right.
So I watched and I enjoyed it. And then, of course, you know, everybody thinks that Maximum Security wins. And then all the drama begins.
So what did you think about the drama? Because I'm not sure. I think I want to hear your answer first because I'm on the fence here.
Okay, so, I mean, I referee sports, and I referee track as one of the things I do. And track and horse racing are very similar, despite the fact that, you know, track is run by humans and horse racing is run by equestrians or whatever people call them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily have a problem with the interference call because I think that was the correct call. I just don't think that they handled it properly. Like, I don't think that the what do they call the riders? What are they called? Jockeys or whatever?
Just the jockeys. Yeah. That's, yes.
Yeah. That one's easy. I don't think that they need to be the ones who basically throw the red flag on this. You know, I think that if you were kind of really watching the race and you kind of go, oh, that something is not right here. You know, when the horse goes from the rail to the outside of the track to back in, you know, to the rail. Like, right. I think everybody kind of goes, something like that doesn't seem right. You know, something about that doesn't seem right. And I think that if they had said, like, right away, hey, we have a problem with this before we let all these people go through the, you know, the celebration and then the agony of defeat, I think that most people are probably okay with this because I think it was a pretty black and white violation. But I think the process by which they got there, you know, making the jockey, you know, do the appeal or whatever and all this other stuff, like, it just seems very, like, AAU basketball-ish, you know, like it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to anybody.
That's possibly the worst way that you could relate. I mean, AAU basketball is the worst of basketball.
Right, it is.
That's terrible. What I'll say, you know, and that's a good point. I do agree with you. That all needs to be a booth review. I never thought about it like that. And I think it would have made the ruling a lot more palatable had there been an instant flag and a booth review. I say booth, obviously, you know, we're used to football or, you know, maybe the review comes from Secaucus or, you know, whatever that garbage is. But yeah, that's a really good point because it seems weird to me that the guy who comes in second wasn't really the guy who took the brunt of the penalty, but you feel like he was the one who asked for the review just because he thought that he might get a win out of it, which, by the way,
that's a pretty smart strategy.
I look, I'm probably going to say it like that a couple of times while we're recording. And I don't in any case mean to make it sound like if I were up to win the Kentucky Derby purse, that I wouldn't do the same thing. I get it. It's just that, you know, the spirit of sport, that's a pretty, it's like a petty crime there, you know? Yeah, I guess that would have made me feel a lot better about it. I have a hard time believing that there's never been a horse that deserved to be disqualified before in the Kentucky
and
Derby.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's the other part of this, right? Like, they've run this race 145 times, and this is the first time this has happened? No way.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what I mean. Like, I guess I wish I understood better the precedent for this DQ in the Derby particularly. I don't really have a solid grasp on, you know, what the percentage of disqualifications there are in. I mean, I don't know how you would, you know, large purses at the large tracks across the country, I guess, or maybe you would just do the Derby, you know, the Churchill Downs,
Belmont. Right.
So that's really the issue for me is, you know, why this year, if it's never happened before, because, you know, you could say, like, you know, you watch it in slow motion and you do see that it's a clear violation, but if it's not caught immediately and they throw up that flag immediately, I don't understand how that's any different than any other penalty or foul in any other sport that doesn't get flagged or whistled and then isn't up for review 5 minutes later.
Yeah, it's very, and I know I talk about a lot of this stuff, like, from an officiating standpoint, because that's kind of where I'm from. But, like, as a referee who's done basketball, you know, and knows a lot of people who officiate basketball at the higher levels, like, that's very difficult to justify from them, you know. And when you look at, like, motorsports, like these, to go back to motorsports, like these blocking type penalties happen a lot in motorsports, but it is not something that is adjudicated 10 or 15 or 20 minutes later. You know, the stewards, the race stewards, as they are called in horse racing too, interestingly enough, like, they see this stuff right away and they say, all right, this is under review. You know, if it happens 5 laps into the race or if it happens at the end of the race, you know, and they don't let anybody declare a winner until they've decided, you know, what the deal is. Now, you know, yeah, like, and I'm sure that that's what, like you said, like, that's what the issue is here. But how do we get, like you said before, how do we get to 145 or 144 of these, and we've never had a disqualifying anything like this in the race? You know, and I don't know if this has happened maybe at the back of the pack and we just don't know about it, or if jockeys just kind of say, eh, it's the Kentucky Derby and the horses are excited and it doesn't matter. You know, like, I would be interested to know if anybody has filed or raised this flag or whatever, and we've just never heard about it.
Yeah, you know, and it's possible, I guess, that, you know, the people who are really up in arms about it, who are sticking up for maximum security, which is the horse that won on the track but then was DQ'd. I guess a lot of what they're saying, or a lot of what I've seen, is, you know, of course, a three-year-old horse who's never run in a race like this and, you know, comes out of the turn and gets into the stretch and the roar happens and the horse spooks and it's all the jockey can do to keep it in a straight line. And, you know, yeah, he strayed a little bit from the rail, but, you know, that was just from the reaction of never having lived through that before. And boy, that makes a lot of sense to me. As a guy who didn't go gamble, yeah, and even, you know, had I gambled on that race, it's not like I would have bet, you know, thousands of dollars where it's going to cloud my opinion. You know what I mean? So, you know, from the outside looking in, that makes a lot of sense to me. So I wonder if that, like, if that's why there hasn't been disqualifications in the past, because, you know, the stewards or maybe the other jockeys or, you know, whatever the case may be, they were kind of all thinking the same thing. I don't know. I what do you think about that explanation?
I mean, I guess I would be okay with it if that were kind of on the record, right? Like, I think if everybody says before the race, and not just, you know, last Saturday, but, you know, 10 or 15 years ago when we actually got smart about all this, I don't know. And you say, okay, this is what's going to happen. Like, we're, you know, like you said, they've never done this. They've never done this. They've never done that. This is what could happen. And everybody just kind of deals with it. And then it's kind of like, okay, we know this is going to happen and everybody's got to work through it. You know, working through the adversity on the field, as I say. Like, I get it then I'm okay with it. But it's like now I feel like it's tough to put that genie back in the bottle, right? Because if you say that from here going out, what do you do about maximum security?
Well, I mean, there's nothing you can do. At this point, there is nothing you can do. I think what horse racing as a body has to do for especially some of these big events and some of these big purses, I think it would make everything better if they got more transparent. And like you're saying, they didn't do it 15 years ago. They didn't do it 10 years ago. They didn't do it 5 years ago. Maybe they do it next year and maximum security goes down as, maybe he runs the Preakness and the Belmont and wins those two and goes down as a humongous asterisk, right? I mean, maybe maximum security becomes the Pete Rose of horse racing. And, you know, I mean, Country House isn't even going to run the Preakness, right? I mean, that dude protested that, got it turned in his favor, won the race, and he is not even going to run in the Preakness. So there is a case to be made that maximum security and his owners and trainers can go out and push for this transparency, go win the Preakness and the Belmont, go become Pete Rose. And, you right now, it's bittersweet and doesn't do a damn bit of good to hear me say this. But if you go do that and take care of the rest of your business, you probably become more famous than had you won the Triple Crown anyway. I mean, look, you're not gonna have the Triple Crown purse or whatever Visa promises or MasterCard or whatever, you know, promises the giant prize. But you're gonna make Triple Crown stud fees if you become the Pete Rose of horse racing. You know, you're gonna go on to write a book about being, you know, the Pete Rose of horse racing. Right. You're gonna go on to, you know, be the push for transparency in horse racing to fix some of these rules. I mean, you really have the foundation of some huge, huge opportunity. If you win the Preakness and the Belmont, right? And that's a huge if, I get it. But maximum security was, you know, a horse that a lot of people thought could do it in the first place. So if he goes out and does that, then there's a possibility that they turn this into some real change in horse racing and, you know, some real change in their bank account.
Right. No, I agree with you. And I actually don't think that maximum security needs to win. I mean, I think that if you, just like you said, they basically don't go out and be assholes about this for the next 10 years and just go out and do their thing and, you know, has a good showing. I mean, yes, winning would definitely help the case and the cause, but I don't think that they necessarily have to win it. You know, I think you can be the conductor of change or whatever without necessarily being the victor or whatever.
Right. No, I understand. I don't think they have to win to be the change agent, but I think they have to win to get ridiculously rich and famous. And
right.
I mean, which is better? You know what right. I mean? Like,
yeah.
Let's not be stupid here.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right. The goal is to make as much money as possible. So,
yes. You
in
know,
every walk of life.
So you don't watch or do anything with horse racing other than the Derby, maybe the Preakness and Belmont.
Yeah, I mean, that's about it. I mean, I think I've told you this before, like, I don't even understand, like, the odds thing. Like, I don't understand the 25-1 and the 7. Like, I don't understand any of that.
Sure. Well, I mean, I guess there's really no big push. Like, I don't have to – I'm not going to do, like, a gambling breakdown, right? Like, anybody could go check that stuff out. But what I will say, I used to be – are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, good. You broke up for a minute. Sorry about that, listeners, but that's the kind of thing that happens when you're commuting and podcasting. I used to be, like, really into horses. Like, I used to ride horses. I used to show horses. I didn't race horses, obviously. I'm like, this is the only thing in history I think I'm too tall for, and I'm pretty chubby. So I didn't race any horses. But I was, like, super into horses and went to the track all the time and, like, knew the people in and out and – And the more I got to know it and I was into it, I knew, you know, there were a lot of years where I cared a lot about the local horse racing scene, particularly at Northfield and, you know, the harness horses, and about like the national thoroughbred scene, and paid a lot of attention. And it got to the point where when you really, really, really break down how the horses are bred and the way they try to keep the lines together, and it's just not good for the animals. And maybe it always has been not good, and I was blinded by it. Maybe it's gotten worse because you've got years and years and years of, you know, like the same type of breeding. So maybe it's compounded each other and gotten worse. I'm not exactly sure where the breaking point is. But it's just not good anymore for these animals. Like, they're not big and thick and stocky and able to withstand, you know, the pounding of the races. And it's just, they're so thin-legged, and they're just completely bred for these races and sprints, really, that so much can go wrong so fast. And I mean, I think Churchill Downs, I can't remember the exact number, but I think they, like, more horses died at Churchill Downs last year than any other track in the country. I mean, yeah. It's either wow, the most, or they were like really second. That's like a wow stat I don't want to get wrong. I wish I remembered to like print it out and have it in front of me, but yeah, in the top five, like
in the top five. How about in the top five?
Oh, hang on a second. Sorry about that, sir. Horses die at racetracks, and often enough that, I mean, it's an issue. Like, it's a big deal. It's a regular thing. And it's because, you know, they get injured and they just can't withstand the pounding that happens from running like that. And at some point, like, I went from, what was that?
You don't heal horses, right?
Oh,
You don't like,
I mean, you can, horses, you don't like, but they're never going to run again. Right? So unless they're going to make a bunch of money at stud, I mean, some people will euthanize them and some people will keep them. I mean, there's been big examples of both. But it's just, and they're not getting sick or getting injured or dying from things that would have happened naturally. Like, it's from shit that's happening in the races and in their training. And so, you know, I went a lot of years, like, either not noticing it. I don't really remember. Like, I don't want to try to defend myself from it. But just keeping myself blind to that. And, honestly, it kind of didn't happen until I no longer owned horses that I started opening myself up to stuff that was more critical of the sports. Any equestrian sport, really, but racing the most. And I mean, it's just not great. I mean, the whole sport is kind of a foul.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like you said, I mean, I think most Americans only think about horse racing. We think about it three times a year, you know, and obviously the most, you know, the biggest one is last Saturday, the Kentucky Derby. And then outside of that, you know, like, no one thinks about it. And, you know, and I think that's why horse racing is so similar to motorsports, right? Because you think about the Daytona 500 or Talladega or Indianapolis, and then you kind of go, all right, well, nobody really watches that, you know, except for hillbillies and rednecks, you know, and we know that's not true in either case, but I think that the sports are, you know, linked closer than we think.
Yeah, well, no, it's really easy to look past. It's easy to not think of, because when you think of sports in which humans play, I mean, we're humans, right? So it's super easy to empathize with the pounding that a football player takes, and, you know, why the sport needs to change for the player's safety, and, you know, why the technology and the rules and the refereeing and, you know, all this other garbage. Like, it's easy to see that.
But even for track and field, I mean, track and field is right. I mean, think about the runner, Usain Bolt. I mean, he doesn't run the equivalent of the Kentucky Derby, but I mean, if he ran the 800 meter dash or the 800 meter run or the mile or whatever, I mean, that's basically the Kentucky Derby. I mean, think about the pounding those guys take, you know, in their knees and legs. And I mean, the marathoners, I mean, that's why I think, like, all these sports, outside of the stick and ball sports, you know, all the other ones are sort of kind of like LinkedIn related. I mean, I know we call them all Olympic sports, but like horse racing and track and field and motorsports are essentially the same thing. You know, the venues
the,
are different.
The one thing, though, like the difference that I think is that as a society, like as a larger body of people, if somebody, if we were watching the Olympics and somebody did a thing and was like, oh man, like these marathon runners, look at the issues that they go through, and everybody would be like, holy shit, look at those issues that they go through. And then Nike would come out with a new shoe and Adidas would come out with a new this, and there'd be these, you know, different terrain rules, and you know what I'm like, it would get fixed if suddenly a bunch of marathoners were breaking their legs, right? If you're in motorsports and there's some big issues, and you know, I mean, we have the safer barriers in NASCAR, and there's millions of safety rules all over motorsports. It's to protect the humans, because it's the humans who are important. When you watch the Kentucky Derby, people will go, man, that's so dangerous to be a jockey. Nobody gives a shit about the horses. You know what I mean? And I don't mean nobody. Like, I'm But that's what happens. I think that's where we kind of lose sight of where we kind of lose sight of the importance of the media. The, like, the horses are the medium, you know? There's not, you know, dog racing doesn't exist in a whole lot of places anymore. You know, cockfighting is illegal.
They don't even do that around here anymore.
Dogfighting is illegal. I'm not trying to pretend like horses who run in the Kentucky Derby are mistreated the way the pit bulls are, but I'm saying there was a dangerous thing that we employed animals to do, and it was gruesome enough that we stopped it. And at what point do we look at horse racing and kind of go, you know? I mean, it's like boxing, right? I mean, at what point do you look at something and you're like, this is just really kind of getting ridiculous, guys. And who knows if horse racing is or isn't there. It's not, I'm not trying to ban the horse racing game, but I think a lot of the ways in which it's evolved over time have gone sour. And I really would like to see some change.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the change agent's going to be, but it probably won't be a positive event the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness or the Belmont. And unfortunately for, you know, those who like horse racing, I mean, that's when, you know, the sport changes for the worse, you know, is when something bad happens. And, you know, there's only so many bad things that can happen in a horse race, so I don't need to say what they are.
No, I was going to say, like, look, this is incredibly crass, but I don't even apologize for it. Like, in football, it took retired players shooting themselves in the chest to save their brain for study. Right. I mean, it's going to be something bad.
Right.
It's
it's going to be, you know, at the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness or the Belmont, it's going to be an accident of some kind with, you know, all the horses, you know, where they have to, it's on national TV and they're pulling horses off the track and all the stuff like that. That unfortunately will be the change agent, you know, and somebody smarter than you and I will say, well, you know, if you guys had been training them like you were in the 50s and 60s, so they were bigger and thicker and stronger, we wouldn't have to euthanize the entire field. You know, and that's unfortunately what it's going to take. I mean, that's, you know, Dale Earnhardt Sr. Dying, you know, in 2011 is what changed NASCAR, you know, and, you know, the safer barriers, I can't remember who it was, you know, and it, I mean, that's why IndyCar developed the safer barrier, you know, like those again, death and destruction.
Boy, that's a hell of a thing to end on, right? I think I'm almost done, but that's not fun. I sound like a PETA activist, so I'm going to have some bacon or something tonight to erase that. Get that taste out of my mouth. Jesus Christ. And then, you know, we're going to be like, thick cut bacon. We're talking about a 22-horse field dying on the track, and I'm just going to leave everybody. This is good. I'm It's fine, people.
Yeah.
What do you? I'm done. Are you done?
Fine.
What do you got coming up? You fine. Doing anything? Do you have to advertise for anything? Or
no, I am on my way to beautiful Amherst Marion L. Steele High School for track and field, and ready for.
Man, I'm ready to get to summer too, man. We're going to Cedar Point all the time. Yes, sir. Yeah, the platinum passes are just where it's at.
Did you guys get passes? Is that
so? No, that's not the skip ahead stuff. That stuff is extra money. But the platinum passes are the water park, the main park, free parking, and a whole bunch of other crap. So that's definitely what we're doing. Yeah, it is fun.
Okay. Well, that'll be fun.
6 or 7, probably.
How many times will you go?
Yeah, tickets are like $70, and
that'll pay for itself after two, won't it?
And the passes are like maybe $200 or so. God. So you gotta go, like, and nobody pays $70 for them, right? You go to Drug Mart and buy a Pepsi can or something.
You know, I haven't been to Cedar Point in probably 15 years. Did I lose you? Josh.
Oh, this is awkward. Did we make it through that whole point, and then right at the very end, I had to.
Okay, now
we're just talking about. Yeah, I can hear you now. The right at the very end, we're talking about Cedar Point, and now everybody's going to be like, "What's going on with their audio, man? Those guys suck." This is ridiculous. I'm leaving it in, man. I'm leave it in. That's just
fine.
That's not well. I was kind of talking.
As long as you were talking,
I don't know. No one leave it in. Like, I'm going to leave it in because I already have a couple kids, but just no one leave it in.
Okay.
Goodbye, Amy.
There's some advice for you in case you were wondering, folks. Bye. Out there. Yeah. Yeah.
Later. Exactly. Hey, thanks for sticking around and listening to all of the stupid things we said. Thank God for people smarter than us. That's all I have to say. You can follow me on Twitter @Josh Flagner, and Damien is @Damien Bowman. We'll talk to you next time.